Welcome to Rooster Radio, a broadcast dedicated to supporting and promoting local artists in the Gaston County and surrounding areas.
I guess it was about 2:30 last night, 2 the night before, and then I was thinking about going. True Lilith is playing tonight, so I was thinking about going to see them, but I'm starting to lean with
probably need to
just chill, go back to work tomorrow morning.
We got 4 bands tonight.
Yep.
How many?
4.
Damn. Yeah. Who else playing?
It's Evil Leaf, Skull Servant, Lurch, and
Grave Next Door.
Grave Next Door.
Okay, so doom, like sludge doom. Metal, yeah. Doom metal.
Yeah,
stuff.
Doom metal.
Gotcha.
Doomfest is that
what
it's
called? Yeah, A Night of Doom.
Is what A Night of Doom.
How was Headbangers Ball?
It was awesome.
There was a lot of the people that were at the Milestone on Friday were going to be here last night. Yeah. So I was like, you don't want to see the Killers?
Yeah, well, very like I said, when I saw the show announcement, I was jealous. I was like, "Fuck, what a great idea, man!"
Yeah,
That's like that, fantastic. You know, now I can't do it. Like,
right. Oh, even that. This is my fifth year doing it there. Yeah. I did Pumpkins and then Placebo and then Deftones and then Weezer and then the Shredded Killers.
Yeah. Dude, I have been trying to find a Deftones tribute. It's my wife's favorite band. I mean, they're one of my favorites, but it's my wife's favorite. Like, she's got like a whole Deftones half sleeve going.
I mean, we'll do it. I can.
All right, we'll talk about that after.
We did like a 25 minute, you know, set primarily around the fur stuff. But
oh man, that's in my opinion, that's their best album.
Around the Fur and Adrenaline.
Adrenaline's great too.
So when White Pony came out, I was so pissed off. Because Deftones was like my favorite band, and the White Pony came out, and it was so different from what I had loved. And I was like, fuck this band. And I went like 12 years without listening to them at all.
Are you
I was
kidding,
like,
man? You couldn't get with fucking RX Queen I refused and Knife Party?
To.
Like,
God, it, that was so the thing good. I refused to just because it was different. I was like, fuck this.
You know, we've actually talked about this before on the show, about how like your taste can change over time and how like you get kind of stuck into this is what I like thing. Yep. And everything. And it's kind of like an older generation thing. Like the kids today don't seem to be that way.
They're all listening to the 90s.
I get annoyed with people that like, oh, well, this is the best type of like, shut up.
Right.
Like this, that's what you like.
Yeah. That's for sure. I've always been a fan of like, bands that are pretty solidly like with their reputation and stuff like that. They've been doing what the fans want in their music and their rock or whatever their style is, and then they come out with, you know, kind of like an experimental album or something like that, or something that's a little different or way different than what they used to be. It's like, fucking let them, you know, like,
right. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Let them try their shit.
That's how you know.
So yeah. A few years ago, I went back and now I like a lot. Like, I mean, the last two I'm not as big on. Just because it's kind of like the same kind of form,
I didn't really like Gore that much. I didn't like Gore. Ohms is good. But Gore, I was...
It's okay. But Diamond Eyes is awesome. I love White Pony now, which is hilarious because White Pony was the album that turned me off to Deftones. And now I'm like, this album bangs.
They're such a great band.
They really are.
But we're not really here to talk about Deftones. We're here to talk about Aaron Lawrence and My Blue Hope.
Oh, yeah.
So introduce yourself to the audience if you
will. So I guess that's my camera. Yeah. I'm Aaron Lawrence, the front man, creative behind a music group called My Blue Hope. I started out as a solo project and eventually just got to a point where I needed a bigger sound than what I could do myself. And so now I've been operating as both. I do a solo thing and I do with the full band. And I've been doing that now for about 4 years.
So for the last 4 years now, before My Blue Hope, what'd you have going? Kind of how'd you get started in the Charlotte scene?
I was married. Before My Blue Hope, I was married. So actually the name My Blue Hope, originated in 99. Me and a buddy of mine started writing songs together, and that never went anywhere, obviously. I got married in 2000, and I never stopped writing, and I always wanted to perform, and so everything that I wrote, it all stemmed back from the idea. I didn't like the idea of having my name on merch. Like, that's all it was I did not like the idea of selling Aaron Lawrence t-shirts. So from the time I was a teenager, I was like, nope, it's going to be a band name. And so My Blue Hope is kind of what it started out. Actually, it was me and my buddy both played Strats and they were both blue. And I called mine blue and he called his hope. And one day they were sitting on the ground next to each other. And I was like, My Blue Hope. I was like, there's the band name. Huh. And then I ran with it. It suits because my music's pretty like sad, but has like,
I mean, you got a little bit of bluesy element to it.
Right. And so it's like it kind of, in some ways, it was like it just kind of matched it, and so I just stuck with the name, and yeah.
And so you know, marriage, you divorce, whatnot, and you decide I'm just going to jump into the music scene.
Basically, it was yeah. I
had my chance, kind of.
So there was a few years, probably about a decade ago, where I did start doing solo stuff. Back, like I used to play with Dollar Signs, back when they were a two piece, years and years ago. And so I was in the scene as a solo act, for a couple of years then. And I put out an EP that I did all myself, and that kind of, it's just nothing happened with it. Again, not really getting a lot of support from the whole, like, the family situation. So I just bowed out.
I'll tell you right now, you try to do anything creative or anything, you know, outside the lines, don't ever expect your friends or family to support it. I tell you that right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're well, the last, like... It just, I don't know, in my experience, the people that, you know, outside of my wife and, you know, kids and stuff, and but, like, you, outside of your immediate family, I don't want to be negative.
Mine was
a lot of my friends aren't really my friends, if you know what I'm saying.
You know, there is.
Which is odd, because anytime somebody that I know, like, goes out on a limb and do something, I'm like the first in line. Let me support this. You know, it's, I don't know. It's a mentality. I don't know why that is. But being, since having done this and meeting other creatives and other people that are doing different things, this seems to be across the board. It's like that. Like, it's not just my friends. It's everybody's friends and extended family that just don't seem to support what they're doing.
Right.
You know, at least in this town, you know,
it's
in
beautiful
this area.
When you step out and do what you want, what you're thinking about doing or whatever. And then that community kind of forms
around
you. Yeah. Right. It and does. It shifts.
You find your biggest cheerleader.
Well, you find your people, you find your tribe, for, you know, if you want to go there with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you find the people, and you know, if we do it well enough, we can, you know, create the culture.
The tribe gets bigger.
Yeah, so yeah. You know, we can keep growing it. You know, I for one am seeing growth. You know, it's growing at a snail's pace. It's like, you know, government bureaucracy trying to get things done, but it's happening. You know, little by little. You know, each week one more person, two more people,
a new face.
Yeah, new faces. And, you know, with the music thing, you know, one of the things that most artists have heard talk about, or we've shared, is that, you know, at some point you make a decision that you're not doing this for money. You're not doing this. You're doing this because you have to, or you want to, or it's your passion.
Right.
Yeah.
And when you get into that headspace and it's not about money or fame, you're just doing this thing that you want to share with the world, I think, like, that's when the real creative shit can open up.
Right, know? For sure. Yeah, at 42, the rock star dream's kind of like, I don't know. Like, probably not going to happen.
Well, I mean, even still, like, you know, we talked about this recently on the show with somebody about, like, do you really want fame? Like, do you want that life? Do you want to always be under them? And especially now, like, you know, you're 42, I'm 44. When we were younger, you didn't have to worry about everything you say and do being recorded and, you know.
Dumb shit you do.
The wrong meme.
Yeah. You can't, you know, so like, you know, I would love it if we could just find that space where we can fly under the radar and just make just enough money to stay open, pay the bills, pay the people, bands make money, everybody's happy, and I don't want all kinds of attention. You know, what happens if, you know, the next election comes along and we host a show with somebody who said something 10 years ago that, you know, like, who knows? like you just don't know. Like, we could put somebody on our stage and find out, you know, a week later that, you know, they diddled a kid or something. It's like, shit, we didn't know that.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, it's
and now you're attracted to it.
now it's then associated. You're
putting on a child pageantry show at a convention.
Those things make me sick, dude. That whole culture makes me sick.
Do you watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
I haven't in a while, but I did. I've seen every episode.
There's that whole episode where they do that to prove that they're
what's the right adjective to describe how I feel about it? It's just it's sickening. Like
it's very inappropriate.
Inappropriate. That's a good that's it.
Right. And it's like the parents that are like, hey, this is a good idea.
You're sexualizing children is what you're doing.
It's disturbing, like especially like when you see them like, okay, the mom, make it sexy. But the natural pageants where they just, okay, put on a dress and you out there and you're natural face and they don't do anything extra, those are okay, but all the extras where they got to put in the fake teeth, the fake hair pieces, they're wearing more makeup than their mothers.
No. Right. My kids were, when they loved watching Toddlers and Tiaras. Just because
it's a train wreck.
It was a train wreck. You're just watching a train wreck. It's like, wow, I can't believe this is.
Yeah.
Well, the part that made, I mean, all of that's true, but the part for me that really kind of turns my stomach is the parents. Like
these parents
are mentally ill. Like,
they really
these moms
are
fucking mentally ill. Right. Like to put that on a child, put that kind of pressure, to put that kind of that, like you're teaching your kid at a very young age that the only thing that makes you worth anything is beauty and pageantry.
Beauty and sex appeal.
Well, I don't like any bleeding over now into like TikTok. I mean, there's so many parents that are putting their little kids on channels. Mm-hmm. Like singing channels where it's like,
I mean, when my daughter first started, like when my daughter's had a, like some sort of like a tablet or something since she was, you know, 5 or 6 years old. And even when she's wanted to do her own YouTube channel, we set her up a YouTube Kids thing. We would not allow her to put any images or video of herself on that channel. And, you know, and she has learned how to navigate the internet responsibly at now 13 years old.
Well, that's what we made sure that. If there was a recording, we never said our kid's name in the recording because my kid had a unique name. And I was
that makes it easier.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, there's a way to navigate this climate and culture that we're in responsibly.
Right.
Most people don't do it.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, that's the problem.
Yeah, they're just like, hi, I'm so and so, and my address is
YOLO.
But I mean, it's just anything that's like a dog and pony show. I get turned off. It's the same thing with like cable news. Like I can't deal with that shit. It's all pageantry.
It absolutely is politics.
All of it. Like we're heading into a political season, and I have done such a good job of weeding out all of the political shit from my algorithms on socials, and it doesn't matter because they're showing right back up because of the time of the season.
And then you got, you know, everything that's going on now. Like everyone has an opinion, and so.
And their opinion's right.
And every opinion is right, and everybody else in the world is entitled to hearing it. So,
here's a soundbite for it. I would think that after 2016 to 2020, that people would be like exhausted from like the vitriol of your political argument. I would think that like, are we over this yet? Like, have we not learned that none of this works? Like, screaming at each other. Have we not learned to like? Yeah, but I guess not because it still finds its way into your face.
You know why? Because people like to argue.
That's true.
I mean, I guess.
Like to argue.
I don't like to argue.
I don't either. Yeah,
I don't like to.
I used to when I was younger. I did.
Yeah.
Oh, I got real wrapped up in this shit for a long time, like the political stuff, and just love to debate and love to argue people. But then, like,
well, debate's fine, but no one wants to do that.
Because debate is respecting both sides.
No, not if you have fun with it.
it's when it gets heated and people start getting offended and
they
stuff
take
like
it
that,
personally.
And they take it personally when you're just talking about a subject or
it's identity politics, right? Like an attack on your someone's perspective is an attack on
them themselves, right?
People can't separate themselves from that. It's just like with music, like you know that you're not everyone's cup of tea,
right?
So like you have to be willing to take those punches, you know, or let that shit roll off your chest, you know, when somebody has something bad to say. Now my thing is I don't ever give bad reviews, right? Like I use TripAdvisor, like because my wife and I travel, we're like, we like that community. Like, there's not a lot of shitheads like there are on Yelp that just like to go on and dog places and put them down. So every now and then I'll post, but I never, like, go on there and just blast off on somebody because that doesn't feel good. Well, but when I have a good experience, I'll go in there and talk about how this was awesome.
And it's like, if something is negative, then just leave it alone. Like,
well, here's the thing.
Why take the time to make that? I'll just be like, I didn't have a good time, and then I'm not going to leave
it. It might not
review.
Be your cup of tea. You might have had it. Maybe they were having a bad day.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, but at the end of the day, what you're doing is someone's pouring their heart and soul into something.
Right.
There's a practical, nice way to do it that's going to progress things, right? So you can get on there and be like, I love this, this, and this. It was a little rough, could use a little work, but this and this was great, you know, like. You can get on there and say, give a review without shitting the place, and also, but also still addressing.
Because I think about the business owner. Like that's where my when I see people like blast off on a business or some, and you know sometimes they're right. Sometimes someone needs to be caught up. Like these jackasses that won't make wedding cakes for gay couples. Like fuck those places. I would like to know about that so that I don't go give them my money. Like I don't want to support racists. You know, or sexist or whatever, you know, businesses.
Assholes.
Yeah. I don't want to give my money to assholes. So you know, I could see where, you know, you might have an argument there, but like because you didn't get a hot enough baked potato, you know, or your steak was overcooked, or maybe the server was rude to you, maybe you were being an asshole. Like
that's after working customer service and retail for a long time. It's like, okay, so how are you acting in this situation? How did you come?
Doesn't matter. Yeah,
it's like when you're
right.
It's like when your kid gets in trouble at school. Like my first question is, well, what did they do to her? Like before I, you know,
what was the cause and effect?
What started this?
I know my kid. It's their fault.
Like,
trust
you
me.
Really had to push them to get them to say that. Yeah.
Have you got youngins?
I have four of them.
Four.
Range from 12 to 22.
Oh wow!
Wow.
Yeah.
So you were a young dad like me.
Yep. Yeah, we started. I was 20 when we had the first one, and ended at 30.
And any of them into music? Are you teaching any of them?
No, not really. Like they all love music, but none of them play or anything. But it's funny, like, you know, being in the scene is, you know, the scene now is a lot of younger people, and so. Like, I'm actually, like, hanging out with people who are, like, my kid's age because they're on the scene. And, like, I brought my 18-year-old daughter last night to our show. And, but a lot of the bands, it's funny when I hear my kids talk about, like, what they were raised listening to. It's like they were kids that were raised on emo. And it's funny because it's like I know all these people that are, like, you know, emo kids, and then my kids literally were because they're like 4 and 5 and singing Na 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 by MCR in the backseat. Like, it's.
I never really did like the emo didn't really resonate with me. Like, AFI was like the most emo band.
You didn't have the emo haircut?
No.
A lot of it. No. So,
I was a young dad when that shit was coming around. Like, I was so. Like, I actually had this, like, chunk of time where. I didn't have the time to like be into. I was so, you know, I don't want to tell too much of my story there, but I didn't have the free time to invest in like I was still listening to 90s shit in like the early 2000s.
Yeah.
Just cause I mean I still had like the big CD case.
Oh,
with,
I
like,
did
a
too.
Couple hundred CDs in. And that's how I was listening to music when the emo thing was catching on. And the one band that caught my attention was AFI.
Yeah.
They put out an album called Sing the Sorrow that's just fucking incredible from start to finish.
Yeah.
And because of that, I gave bands like MCR and. Panic at the Disco a chance, which Panic at the Disco, like they were emo for like 10 minutes and then he turned into a pop star.
Yeah.
But
well, that's because they stopped being a band.
Yeah. I mean, he was writing everything anyway, but yeah.
He wasn't the songwriter though. That was the first two albums. It was the guitarist was the singer or was the songwriter.
Okay.
And Brendan was just singing his lyrics. And that's why after Pretty Odd, there's a big change in the
Have you ever seen him live?
No, I've never seen.
So my daughters are really into Panic at the Disco. My wife even too, and I like them. I've seen them a couple times, but I went. I took my stepdaughter to see Panic at the Disco with Weezer. Mm. This is when she was in high school. And my wife and I were like, well, yeah, we'll go see Weezer.
Yeah, right.
And she wanted to see Panic. So we let her bring a friend. So we go, and Panic goes on first. And my wife and I were blown away. We were like, holy shit.
He's
like,
got an amazing voice. His
amazing really voice, is. Amazing stage presence. They a lot going on stage, choreographed stuff. I mean, dude was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And so that was great. And then Weezer come out, and they just kind of stood there. Like it was definitely one of those times where, like, the opener just blew the headliner out of the water. And I told my wife on the way out of that show, I was like, I don't think that was a good decision to, like, have Panic come open for Weezer. Like, they probably – I don't know what they were thinking there. Like, you had to know that this show was better than yours.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, you have to know, at least after the first night, you got to be like, uh-oh, what we get ourselves into.
Right.
But Weezer, I mean, Weezer is going to be the bigger draw. Or, you know what I mean? It was like
it was a smart tour because parents such as us
exactly.
were going to spend you, the buy the tickets
you
for the
leave
kids.
With the respect that you didn't have before for Panic.
So since then, we're Panic at the Disco fans.
Right.
And we saw them again at a stadium indoors. And that was, came hanging on wires, flipping around. It's like, we're at the circus, we had a concert. Like, it's really cool. Hmm. You know, but Mick, I'll credit Mick Munchow from Ground Zero. He's been saying this for years. He's like, you know, if you're not the band that everyone's talking about after the show, then you need to work harder.
Yeah,
for sure.
That and ever since I heard those words coming out of his mouth, I'm like, that is like the gospel, especially in the local scene.
Yep.
Like, you want to be the band everyone's talking about at the end of the show.
For sure. Yeah, and you know, like. You know, there a lot of the bands are always like, oh, we gotta, you know, support each other and we're not a competition. And it's like, okay, yeah.
But you are.
But
at
we
same
are.
Time.
Like, well, I mean, if we're honest about it, or at least I am, I'm competitive and I'm like, I want to know that at the end of the night, my band was the best. And if we weren't, then I want to keep playing with those bands again because they're great.
Well, that's a good perspective.
And I want to. Up my game,
right?
Yeah, to want to get better. Like, that's a good thing. Yeah,
it's a healthy competitiveness.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Well,
exactly.
And if everybody on the list is trying their damnedest like that, then it's gonna be a fucking good
then
show.
Then it's gonna make a good show.
Yeah, yeah. It's gonna be fun.
And that's how I always felt about like creating a band. I always felt like if I am the weakest link in my band it would be great.
Right.
Like
it's a good perspective. That's why we don't do, like, Battle of the Band. Like, I've had a few people have asked, like, well, are you going to do a Battle of Bands? We're not. We're not going to do that because you're inviting a culture or, like, a... You know,
a popularity contest.
I didn't think about it from that.
You're inviting, like, this competitive thing, and I don't want to pit bands against each other.
Yeah.
I'm more of the collective mindset when it comes out. Like, let's all put on a good show and lift each other up. You know, so, no, we're never going to do a battle. We'll do showcases.
Right.
You know, like, you know, besides, what do I have to offer? Like, what can I give a band? What's the grand prize? You know, like, but really.
A little plastic trophy.
Yeah.
That would be great.
You little rubber rooster or something.
Yeah. Hey, we got all these 3D printers in the Misfit market now. Yeah. We create a rooster trophy.
Spray paint it.
But it is good to have, like, a healthy competitive nature. But the point that I'm making is, like, you want to do better. And even with, like, open mic, right? This is, like, a conundrum for me. Like, I don't ever want to tell people what to do creatively. I do my best to stay away from people's creative process. Like, when I book a band, I'm booking a band because I believe that you'll put on a good show. But a lot of times, like, open micers will come and ask me how that was. And, you know, I do my best of, like, toeing that line of not being too critical, but try to offer something constructive. And that still, like, feels weird. But we had a band in here recently that had been here before. They song selection, great. Level of talent, musicians and the singer, great. But the show, like they're
stage
new.
Stage presence.
The stage presence, yeah. Like, not there yet. So, like, what's the nicest way to say, like, I like you guys, I want to see you do better, but here's
your
what
stage presence sucks.
So it's hard to say. Well, what I do is like move around more, like move around, get people into it, because what I told this particular band was like, your singer's amazing, but no one out here, like, she needs to sing in a way that we know that she knows she's amazing. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
the timid kind of like humble thing, like, you got to throw that shit in the trash when you get on stage. Like, right. You got to walk on that stage like, I'm the fucking man.
It's like almost like that alter ego. You got to let it kick in.
It absolutely is, too. Like, if me on stage and me off stage are very different. On stage, I'm like, yep, this is where I belong. Yeah. Then off stage, I'm like, where's the corner? I'm going to go sit quietly.
Let me go introvert for a while.
Yeah. And it's, you know, so it's because I want these fans to make money. I want to, you know, I want to put on great shows. So when I see people come in and perform, and, you know, I try my best to just be constructive without some, but then, you know, then I'll say something, then I'll turn around and be like, who the fuck am I?
Should I have said
that? Yeah. Who the fuck am I? Like, I'm not a music critic, but at the end of the day, they're asking my opinion.
So if
you're asking my opinion, I feel like I should be able to give an honest answer.
And at the end of the day, you're not really just selling music. You're selling an experience.
Right. It's a whole show. Correct.
It's visual. It's audible. You're selling
an experience. And if you're not necessarily visually appealing, but if you're not entertaining, let me get this right.
Just call somebody ugly.
I did not call anybody ugly. I'm going to say visually entertaining. Let's put it that way. You can't just stand there.
Look at the Rolling Stones.
Just,
you don't have to be visually appealing.
You don't have to be. Well, first of all, but
I'm glad you said the 60s.
I'm glad you said that, though, because you don't have to go on stage and be Mick Jagger. You don't have to go on stage and be David Lee Roth.
You don't
have to high kick.
You don't have to cut cartwheels.
You can turn around and go next to your guitar player. You can lean forward. It's just that little bit of movement. Not just standing there.
It's confidence. Yeah. Like you need to exude confidence when you get up there. Like, but I mean, there's certain types of music that lend themselves to different stage presences.
For sure. If you're
like,
doing
I don't want to get too in the weeds with
singer, it. Singer-songwriter. Yeah. Well,
look at the Beatles. The first couple of years, they just stood there in their
suits. They did the little
they
had
to make their hair jiggle.
That was edgy for their time.
That was edgy, yeah. Once they started moving those hips, boy.
Yeah.
You got in trouble.
Mom and Dad's shut that shit down.
Yeah.
Oh my God, he wiggled his hips. You can't watch this. That's gyrating.
And you're pregnant.
Clutching their pearls. Oh, what is he doing? And Elvis just ruined the whole generation of parents.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy because now you got, you know, dudes giving lap dances to the devil. And I see it and I'm like, oh, look at that.
Look what you did, Elvis. Look what you did.
It's like,
I really don't care enough to make a big deal about
it.
Just, in the 90s, I mean, like, that was nothing. You look at the stuff like Manson and Rob Zombie and all, like, the ones that were like edgier bands in
Manson
the 90s.
Manson scared shit out of parents.
Manson did scare some people.
And now it's like, you know, someone in the rap world is doing it.
Yeah.
All of a sudden people are like, what? And it's like,
that was right when that satanic scare thing was happening too, right?
The 90s resurge of the satanic panic.
Oh, dude, did anybody ever have a book burnings in church when they were kids? And album burnings?
I was aware of them, but
I was raised in a Pentecostal church. So like there were nights at twice. Yeah. I remember two times I was drugged to like a bonfire.
What'd they burn?
It was albums and CDs, cassette tapes, like devil music. And yeah, that's
you're
some
like,
wild
give me my
shit,
devil
man.
Music. I'm gonna hide it.
It didn't work. It didn't fucking work.
I love that's what Jesse says. And I think he said it when they were here. He's like, if it wasn't for sinning, I wouldn't know any of these guys on the couch.
Yeah,
you know, it's like sinning's got me where I am today.
Yeah, I think people need to like just take it down a notch. It's like, you know, believe what you believe. Good for you, but like, how are you gonna tell somebody how to have a taste? It's like what we were talking about earlier, like arguing that, well, thrash metal is better than death metal. Like, it's a stupid fucking thing to say. Like, if you're not into this art, then go enjoy the thing you enjoy. And
right.
Like, let these burning someone's fucking albums, You're not helping anyone there. I mean, all you're doing is helping the artist make more money because I'm going to go buy that album again.
That's what I never understood. They go and buy the albums to burn. I'm like, you realize how much money you just made?
Such a counterproductive thing to do.
Dumbasses.
They're doing that with Nike's. Well,
Nike. They've done about a year and a half ago. Anything that, like, it was the albums and CDs and
books.
It was Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. But Lord of the Rings is okay. Lord of the Rings is okay.
Yeah.
It's because it was grandfathered in.
Well, it was. Yeah, because Tolkien was a huge Christian, so.
But then it was, oh, my gosh, it's the Nikes, it's Budweiser, it's really.
Did you see Bud Light signed, like, a $100 million contract to sponsor UFC?
Mm-hmm.
Official beer of UFC?
Yeah.
Hey, boy, they are doing everything they can to roll that shit back.
I mean, who cares?
I
don't care.
I honestly, one of my old sayings, I just can't bring myself to give a shit. I just can't. Like, there are so many more important things in life that need my attention. I don't care if a tranny drinks Bud Light. I don't care if you listen to Satan music. I don't care if you listen to gospel music. I really don't. All I care about is that you come to see Aaron Lawrence when he plays here at the Rooster.
Mm-hmm. On Thursday.
I love how you just roll right
this
in.
This Thursday.
You're so good at that.
Roughly 9 p.m. Yeah. I promise my voice will be back to normal by then.
But no, it's a good time, man. Live music, you know, it's, you know, what you're doing with, like, the, you know, with church, like, the whole book burning thing and all that. You know, you've got your little community of small-minded people that want to do their thing. You know, we're trying to do the same thing, but with music. Like, you know, not everyone's into baseball, not everyone's into basketball, not everyone's into church. So, but for those of you that are into the arts and into live music, that's what we're here for. You know, and you know, if it's not your cup of tea, fine. But we want you to come and experience this, because out of all those things I've experienced in life, nothing feels better than live music and live entertainment. Like, that's the place where I feel most at home. That's the place where I feel most accepted and cared for and loved and appreciated. And that's why I think I want to share that with the world. You know, I'm just not going to be, like, religious about it and, like, shit on people that don't, like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like being nice, you're doing this and being nice about it, I feel like that's the way to get there. Now, we'll find out. Time will tell. You know, I don't know about you. You've played how many different venues? You know, I would imagine that most venues have that kind of attitude, right? I mean, isn't that the goal we're trying to achieve here?
That's live music is, I mean, that is where the heart and soul of it all is. And speaking of sharing and new experiences and everything, so Thursday, David Gillespie, is a good friend of mine who I met probably 6 months ago. He's from Portland. He's an amazing singer-songwriter and is not broken to the scene yet. You know, as you know, I invited him on, so he'll be opening at 9 p.m. and he is amazing. So,
is he going to open mic?
He's up in Kannapolis, like where I'm at. So he's done a couple up that way, and he's played some, like, breweries up around there. He's completely new to the scene and is, like, doesn't know how to, like, break in. I'm like, oh, dude, like, this, but he's so good.
Well, that's cool of you to bring him onto the show like that. Yeah. That's being a good sport. It's being a good artist, you know, good member of the community. But tell him, come down for an open mic anytime. Yeah, and I mean, he don't have to come here. There's open mics all over Charlotte, but we have the best.
We really do. Right, Bob?
What?
I said we really do, right?
We really do, yeah.
Right, Bob?
Call me out.
That's every Wednesday night, right?
Every Wednesday. And, I mean, literally, I'm pretty sure every night of the week, Monday through Friday, Monday through Thursday,
there's one somewhere.
There's one somewhere.
Yeah.
So, yeah, tell them just, you know, jump in. You know, but what's cool about open mic, why I love it so much, is it is like a building block for the community, right? So I've had so many shows where I've been able to bring on an opener for an act. I've actually got a show coming up that's all open mic artists. That November 18th, Organic Soul will be here with Anna and Tim opening. They're all people that we met through open mic. And opportunities present themselves when you start to show up and be part of that community.
That is absolutely great. That's where I got my start was the Evening Muse one probably 15 years ago now. That was where I played my first public performance. I think I was like 27 when I finally was like, all right, I'm going to do something here.
That's when No Doubt was great.
And it really was. It's very different now.
Oh, I know.
But it was, yeah, it was, and because of that, I met people.
Yeah.
And, you know, ended up becoming like different bands that, well, like Eric Button, who still hosts it, he had Dollar Signs, and he was like, hey, do you want to open for us? And that's where, you know, that's where I first got my foot in the door.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of new faces here lately with our open mic, and it's really cool. Like, I mean, if you're not an entertainer, like, it's cool to just come and like, it's free entertainment, right?
Right.
You know, and you never know what's going to go up there. Like, you know, I'll meet people on the street and they'll tell me they're a musician. I'm like, oh, I'll come to the open mic. I have no idea what they're going to do.
Right.
And people surprise you all the time, you know.
Like, we had a saxophone on stage last week. It was awesome.
Yeah, dude playing sax with a guy who does kind of like pop hip hop.
Yeah.
Like, it was cool. It was so cool.
I was like, this is cool.
Yeah, haven't seen this yet. Like,
and then he did a little saxophone solo on his own. And then they did another little hip hop thing.
Yeah, it's a great, like I said, building block for the community. And I highly recommend like supporting the open mics. Like if you're looking for something to do on a Wednesday night, come here, come hang out, man. You won't be disappointed.
You're gonna have fun.
You know, every now and then somebody gets up there that needs work, but you know what? That person had the courage to get up in front of people and like, you know, it's a litmus test. Where do I stand?
Well, and it falls back to what I was saying earlier about like the competitive thing.
Yeah.
If you are that person, you probably know.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, unless you're just delusional, you probably know, oh, these are things I need to work on if I'm going to be at the level of these other people.
Ariel and I and Bob, we've watched people get better and better.
And that's what I was about to say. That's the most magical thing about it is watching people grow, and you're just like, you're over here like that community of cheerleaders. It's just like, yay, I'm so proud of them.
Yeah,
I'm so proud of them.
Rock on. Well, Aaron, tell people where to find you, what to look for. Kind of be a commercial for a minute.
Right. I'm so bad at this. So My Blue Hope. We have one full length album that you can find it on all major streaming platforms except for Amazon. Just because Amazon's a pain in the ass to get on with. But the album is called Farewell Constance. It is a blue sky with red and white balloons floating away. I've had a lot of people come to our shows, and then afterwards they're like, oh, where can we find you? And I'm like, oh, Spotify, My Blue Hope. And they pull it up, and they look at the album cover, and they're like, is that it? And I'm like, yeah, that's it. And they're like, it's not what I was expecting, because it's very bright colors. So yes, that is our album. No, we are not happy.
You want to talk a little bit about that album, like, you know, the inspiration, you know?
Most of my music.
Would you call it wrist cutting music?
God, really?
I've been there a time or two. So I suffer from borderline personality disorder, and you know it's I would say recovering, kind of like I don't know if you know anything about borderline. It's very stigmatized these days. Not a lot of great representation of it. Probably the most accurate that I've seen, sadly, is BoJack Horseman. Probably okay. He's about the most borderline character I've seen. But it's in some ways, you know how like alcoholics will be recovering alcoholics. It's like you never stop being an alcoholic. You just choose to take the steps every day.
Yeah.
Borderline is kind of like that. It's like you go through the treatments for it, and it's kind of like it's every day you're having to be mindful and keep those steps. But the songwriting for me is it's a real nice outlet. And
would you say that this album is autobiographical?
All my stuff is.
So you're not severely, really telling stories. This is more like therapy, kind of.
Yeah,
this is like music to relate to, right?
It's I write everything for me, and then hope other people get something from it. Everything is, and that's why, I think the people that gravitate towards my music the most, are people that pay attention and feel it, because it is,
every single episode we get a siren.
We're
sorry.
Every
single one we get that.
It's that time.
So you're saying that the feedback that you're getting from fans and people that listen are people that have similar situations. They're feeling it because it's. I mean,
like hurt music for hurt people.
Yeah, yeah. What I was gonna say was like you know, it kind of goes deep. You know, it's just a coincidence that the name Blues and But Your Names, but it kind of like Blue October.
I've not listened to them a lot, but that is a band that a lot of people.
Well, when I listened to your music, that was kind of the comparison I was drawing. I was like, man, this guy's, it reminds me of.
Right.
It's just because of the way you write music and the lyrics and
it's,
to your songs.
It's because it's very, it's like, this is me. And there are songs where it's like, it will be kind of a fictitious story. You know what I mean? Like the narrative is changed so that it's not so, on the nose, but it all is stemming from a real feeling. And there are several, like that album, there's like one song, By Inches, I wrote the day after my mom got diagnosed with breast cancer. And that whole song, it got me thinking about just mortality in general and what we leave behind. And then a lot of the music won't necessarily sound real dark. Like there's like the song Stillborn is kind of a pop punk kind of like vibe. Upbeat thing. Okay. And then you listen to the lyrics and it's about suicidal ideation. Right. And it's like lyrically, that's where I'm like really burying it, and then the music is like, "Hey guys, so we're on like stage."
The music, the melodies are more upbeat, makes you feel good, but the content is
right.
I mean, Hurt Music for Hurt People should have been the name of the album, right?
Yeah, that is clever.
Hurt Music for Hurt People, that should have been the album name. Again, just like with all the artists we talk to, there's people that will gravitate toward that, and sometimes there's whatever it is you're going through. Sometimes that kind of music can help deal with.
And that's exactly So, Smashing Pumpkins are without a doubt my biggest influence, and that's obvious to anyone who's ever heard me. Like they're like, you sound like it. I'm like, yeah. I do. but I think the biggest reason that the Pumpkins were such influence on me was lyrically, when I heard Melancholy for the first time, that album was the first time I ever like heard songs that was like, I'm not alone in this.
Yeah.
It was like the songs were, it was like bearing his soul, but in seeing that, it was like, well, shit. Like, yeah. I relate to this, but I relate to it, which is kind of comforting because that means I'm not the first. There's not, and so now when I write, I kind of write in the way that like inspired me in hopes that it may help other people.
Yeah, well, if it helps just one person,
right?
You know, that, then you've done your job.
And then if it doesn't, hopefully more than one people just like the sound.
Because when you have, well, yeah, I mean, when you have the skill and the ability to write music and do that, it also gives you something productive to do with all of that, that negative energy.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Energy. So, you know, it's, you know, we've talked a little bit before about that on the show, about how therapeutic it can be. But Aaron, I really appreciate you, man. I appreciate what you do. I like the music you make. And I can't wait to hear it live here on Thursday at the Rooster for Aaron's storyteller session. And that'll be Thursday at 9 p.m.
Yep.
Right, so thanks again for being on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We're
going
to wrap it up. We're going to get out of here. And, you know, we got a show to do.
Yeah.
You want to do that? But yeah, come check us out Thursday night. Come check out Aaron and David.
David Gillespie.
Yep. Okay. I was pronouncing it Gillespie when I was...
I think it's Gillespie. I don't know. I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure he'll answer to either.
Awesome. Look forward to that. Thanks again for doing this. I appreciate you, man.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.